Hello everyone. So welcome to the Oxford CSML seminar. So this week, the speaker is Murad Dogdu. Murad is assistant professor at the University of Toronto, the departments of computer science and statistical sciences. He is a faculty member of the machine learning group and the Vector Institute and the CIFAR chair in artificial intelligence. Before joining Toronto, he was a postdoc at Microsoft Research New England. Murad did his PhD in statistics at Stanford University, advised by Mohsen Bayati and Andrea Montanari. Today, Murad will be talking about some new result, a very exciting new result about convergence of online stochastic gradient descent under infinite noise variance and the non-convexity.
Hey, thank you, June, for the very kind introduction. And thank you all for coming to the talk. So today I'll talk about convergence of online stochastic gradient descent under some modern setups where you may have infinite noise variance or a non-convexity in the problem. So as June mentioned, I did my PhD in statistics department. And back then, pretty much every talk started with the following line, and I'll stick to the tradition and also do the same. So we consider for this slide, the following linear model, where y is the response, z is the covariance, beta zero is the true parameter that you're after, and epsilon here is the noise. So the noise is assumed to have conditional mean. And when you're trying to find beta zero, what you do is you write down the population least squares problem and write this as a minimization problem. So minimum of this population risk is, say, a population problem because it's under expectation of both response and the covariance is going to give you the true beta naught. And since this is a minimization problem, you can write down the stochastic gradient descent updates given as this. Here, gamma t is your step size. So it turns out stochastic gradient descent with a proper step size choice will give you the true parameter beta zero. So of course, I did not, so I left a couple of blank space here. The reason for that is what happens if you assumed the noise variance is infinity, right? So the noise may have heavy tails, it's coming from the model, and the second moment of the noise is infinity, then this objective function is not defined. So this becomes infinity, but nothing is stopping a practitioner to run SGD in this scenario. Again, it turns out SGD still finds the true parameter beta naught. So some of you may see what's going on here, and some of you may be surprised, just like I was. And I'll tell you why this is happening after I give you some convergence results on SGD. Okay, so throughout this talk, I'm interested in the following unconstrained optimization problem, where we're trying to minimize a function f of x, and its argument is in d dimension. And we would like to use stochastic gradient descent algorithm given as the following recursion. And here, gamma t is denoting the step size. This is gradient of the function you're trying to minimize. And this is denoting the state-dependent noise. So noise is state-dependent, and it is an important component of this algorithm. So two things that I would like to study in this talk is that in modern settings, as I described, in the infinite noise variance and under non-convexity, how does this SGD algorithm converge? And how does the Polyakov-Rupert averaging behave? So I'm not specifying where they converge or how they converge or the type of convergence. And I'm just saying these are the two things that I would like to study, and we will see different notions of convergence and very soon. Okay, and I'll talk more about polyacropyrd averaging, why it is interesting. So this SGD looks a bit different than the SGD that we run into in machine learning algorithms, but it is actually the same thing. So consider the stochastic optimization problem, where you have a function f of x that can be written as the population risk. So the population risk in machine learning is the expected loss over a random variable z. This is typically your data points, y and z together. And this expectation is in over the data points, so you don't have access to it. So you resort to a stochastic optimization algorithm like stochastic gradient descent. The SGD that we run in general, it takes a bunch of data, and mini-batch SGD, say with a batch size B, is the estimates the gradient of this function f or using the mini-batch. So B samples, you just estimate the gradient of f of x, which is a population quantity. You estimate it using this over this batch of data points. And what you can do here is to convert this back to our formulation. You can simply say that the noise is given by the difference between this gradient estimator with the true gradient itself. So this is the noisy gradient, in other words, and difference between this noisy gradient with the true gradient is the noise in my SGD algorithm. I would like to emphasize that this is online SGD, meaning that this is a stream of data coming in and each batch is independent from each other. So this is not like you have a batch of N data points and you subsample a B data points from that. That's not what we're doing. There's a stream of data coming in, and that's why the title is online SGD. So I am interested in the settings where the noise has infinite variance. The noise is heavy tailed. So the first item is motivated by recent observations that the SGD can exhibit heavy tails in many modern machine learning models. And second thing I'm interested in is the objective function is non-convex. This is also motivated by the fact that many of the objective functions in machine learning is non-convex. And lastly, a practitioner can never take infinite iterations of SGD. So in some scenarios, I would like to characterize these convergence behavior with a non-asymptotic analysis so I can quantify how much iterations I need exactly. So these are the three items that I am interested in. So remember that when I said I'm interested in the SGD iterates, I'm also interested in the polyacropyrd averaging. So what is polyacropyrd averaging? It's a very simple adjustment to the SGD output. So you run SGD for T iterations and you average them out. That is called polyacropyrd averaging. And Polyak and Ruppert introduced this in different papers around the same time. It turns out this algorithm has good generalization properties observed numerically. Also, you can, under classical setups, you can prove that this is optimal, achieves Kramer-Rao lower bound under finite noise variance, etc. So it enjoys some nice properties. And one thing that I am interested in is that it admits a central limit theorem in the classical setting where the noise variance is finite and the function you're minimizing is strongly convex. And this is the basis for many inference methods under SGD algorithm. And pretty much all the inference methods that rely that take the algorithmic part of the that take into consideration the algorithmic part of the methodology relies on this CLT. But what happens to this CLT if the noise variance is infinity or f is non-convex? And what is the rate of this CLT? These are the two things I would like to answer. Okay, so there are many papers on stochastic gradient descent because it's the method of choice these days to train a model. For that reason, but many of them actually can be considered as kind of follow-ups to these classical results by Polyak and Juditsky and Krasulina, etc. And I will only compare this talk to the classical results, and I also consider this these are the most important papers that kind of led the field. So the first result is by Krasulina, where the first paper to consider infinite variance in SGD, infinite noise variance in SGD. So what this paper did was they, in one dimension, the function is assumed to be strongly convex, so it looks like this, and the noise variance has, the noise variance is infinity, but the noise has the alpha moment finite, and alpha is less than 2. And the step size is t to the minus rho, decaying step size, where rho is set to be 1. Now the convergence in LP, the convergence rate of SGD in LP, is given by this expression. And it turns out that with this rate, you cannot show that the Polyak averaging, weak convergence of the Polyak-Ruppert averaging. So the reason for this, I'll get to it, is that the step size decay is too fast. Rho equals 1 is a too fast of a step size decay. So that'll not give you, at least as far as the proof is concerned, weak convergence of the Polyak-Ruppert averaging. So the seminal work by Polyak and Juditsky was considering the strongly convex setup. And they assume that the noise variance is finite, alpha is 2, and they considered a range of step size decays where it is ranging from 1/2 to 1. Notice that rho equals 1 is not included here. The reason for that is rho equals 1 is too fast, and anything below is fine. And the rate that they consider, I mean, this they relied on previous results too, is this much. And the most important part is that they showed the asymptotic CLT, which led to many interesting results. They show that it achieves the Kramer-Rao lower bound. They show that the, so they showed, I think, the first asymptotic CLT for the Polyak-Ruppert averaging. And many other papers actually use this idea to construct inference methods based on the CLT that they proved. And in this talk, I will first consider a class of functions that are strongly convex, but it is a stronger assumption than strong convexity. So strongly convex functions have Hessian that live inside a PSD cone. So let's say this is the PSD cone. I will consider a set of Q-positive definite matrices that is a subset of the PSD cone. So this is the orange region that you're seeing. And I'll explain what this red region is later. I will assume that the noise variance is infinity. So we are in this setting, and the step size, it satisfies the exponent of the step size is in this range. So notice that when alpha is 2, you have finite variance, and this reduces to the same interval that Polyak and Juditsky considered. This is the rate that I obtain, and we show that the Polyak averaging actually does not admit a Gaussian CLT, it admits the alpha stable limit. And it is heavy tail, it doesn't have a finite variance. So many of the inference methods that you relied, that you constructed relying on this asymptotic CLT will not hold in this case. And I will, as a follow-up to this, I'll talk about how we can actually make these asymptotic CLT results non-asymptotic and prove that this CLT can be achieved with a rate of d square over t, but under the assumption that the third moment of the noise is finite. So this is a finite, this is a non-asymptotic CLT, and based on Stein's method, and this is the rate is d squared over t. So this is going to tell us that in practice, these CLTs, especially in high dimension, require too much work. And I will relax the strong convexity assumptions, which is in the first four items. I will assume that the strong convexity is contained only in the tails of the function, as in the last figure here, where around the origin you're allowed to have any behavior, and with an assumption that the fourth moment of the noise is finite, I will show that the asymptotic CLT, the Gaussian CLT, still holds. So these are the three results that I would like to talk about. And before I give you the results, I'll try to give you some intuition. And intuition is quite simple, and it'll lead to the assumptions that we have. So assume that you're going to run an SGD, and at iteration t, you are here. This is the point you are, and x star is where you want to get at. So once you have strong convexity, you run gradient descent, you will converge to this point with a small enough step size. So let's consider the one step of the full gradient descent. This is the full gradient descent. So it takes you from your xt and makes it closer to x star, right? So the distance from xt to x tilde, which is the output of gradient descent, non-stochastic gradient descent, is going to be decreased following this rule, right? So there is a constant r, which is less than one. So it'll multiply the distance from xt to x star and make it distance from x tilde t plus one to x star. So this is the gradient descent algorithm. And in the stochastic gradient descent, you have a noise. So what it means is that you have the gradient descent plus step size times some noise. So this is the stochasticity part, and this is where your SGD is getting you, right? And it turns out that this distance is going to be controlled by the step size, because this noise is multiplied by the step size, right? So smaller the step size is, this noise will be smaller and smaller. Okay. Now I can construct this triangle and write down this triangle inequality, basically the distance from the next iterate of SGD to the optimum is it's smaller than the summation of these two edges. And this is the basically triangle inequality. And what this is telling me is that, so this is getting, I'm obtaining this from the contraction due to SGD. I'm obtaining this due to noise is multiplied by the step size. Okay, so it's a very simple argument. And this leads to the assumption that we have, and it's going to be hopefully intuitive. So the gradient descent contraction is, as I said, is given by this relationship, this inequality. In the case where you have finite noise variance, the standard analysis continues with setting this distance from xt to x star as the expected value, I mean, this L2 distance, basically the expected value of the squared Euclidean norm. So, and it turns out that the gradient descent iteration satisfies this inequality following the standard analysis. So all I need to show is that I need to show this guy, which is the R here, is less than one. So remember, I'm going to let the step size go to zero because I need to decrease the step size in this part of the talk. So this means that for a gamma that is small enough, this quantity has to be smaller than one. In other words, I'm just going to say that for small enough gamma, there is a L such that this inequality is satisfied. Now, this is exactly equivalent to saying that F is strongly convex, or Hessian of F is uniformly positive definite. So these two statements are equivalent. Okay, so this was the standard SGD analysis, and it turns out strong convexity is giving us nice results. But in the infinite noise variance setting, you see I cannot use the second moment here. So what I need to use is the pth moment where p is smaller than 2. And for that reason, I'm going to choose my distance. I mean, this is not a metric, but so this distance as the expected value of the pth power of the pth norm of this distance. If this is my new distance metric, then the recursion I wrote for the second in the finite noise variance case, I can write it equivalently as this. And with the same strategy, I need to make this first term here, which is going to be giving me the decay smaller than 1 so that I have a contraction. Okay, and the equivalent expression is this. So I need to have this p power of the pth norm less than or equal to 1 minus L gamma. And it turns out, just as this was equivalent to the uniform positive definiteness, this will also imply some sort of positive definiteness, but it's going to be stronger than the standard notion of positive definiteness that we all are familiar with. So this is the idea. I need a contraction in some distance. Second, so if the distance is the Euclidean distance squared, then it gives me strong convexity. If it is the pth norm, it'll require something stronger. That is the idea. So let's recap some of the PSD cone results where we have in the standard classical setup. So, as I mentioned, this inequality, basically this matrix having this operator norm squared being less than or equal to 1 minus L gamma for all small gamma, is equivalent to F being strongly convex, which is saying that the Hessian is lower bounded, right? And the set of, so this means that this implies that the set of matrices that set of matrices that are over this set, basically the Hessian of the function you're trying to minimize, is a subset of the PSD cone, which is represented as this cone in the figure on the left. So a symmetric matrix Q is positive definite if the norm of V is 1. We have this inequality, which is a strict inequality. It's this quadratic form is greater than 0 all the time for all V on this unit sphere. And Q is positive semi-definite if this inequality is not strict, right? And the set of PSD matrices defines a cone. So this is that cone. Now let's go to the P norm. So this was 2 norm here, right? Let's go to the P norm and see what happens. To get the contraction in the P norm, I need this inequality for gamma in this range. Now, before showing you the equivalence, I need a definition. I need the sine power of a vector. So given a vector like this and some positive or q greater than equal to 0, the sine power of a vector is defined by this quantity. So I have the sine of each entry and taking their absolute value and raising to the power of q. So you can, okay. Let me give you the definition and then I'll show you the figure and how they look like. So a symmetric matrix Q is P positive definite if for all V on the unit sphere, but the unit sphere in P norm satisfy this strict inequality. And it is P positive semi-definite if this strict inequality becomes non-strict. And set of all PPSD matrices are also defines a cone. And here is how the picture looked like. When P is equal to 2, this definition here exactly reduces to the PSD cone. So when P is equal to 2, you have the PSD cone, that is the blue region here. And this definition reduces to the standard PSD definition. And when P is equal to 1, then this definition reduces to the set of all diagonal dominant matrices that have positive entries. And that is also a cone. That is this red region here. And any P that is in between 1/2, you still get a cone, but that is in between these two cases when P is equal to 1 and 2. So there is this inclusion relationship between these cones. And it is important that this, when P is in between 1 and 2, this cone lies in these two cones of diagonal dominant and PSD cones. And the cone of diagonally dominant matrices is the most extreme case. So if you make this assumption, then any of our assumptions are already satisfied. I'll talk about this a bit further. So let me give you the two assumptions that I need for the convergence of SGD in the heavy-tailed regime. So I will assume that the set of matrices, basically these Hessian matrices, are bounded and uniformly Q-positive definite. So when you see in this region, so when you see a Q-positive definiteness assumption, so it is referring to this uniformly on the set of all Hessians, and here P is equal to Q. So this is my first assumption on the function. And I will assume that the noise admits the following decomposition. So noise itself is state dependent, and there is a state dependent component and a state independent component. By state, I mean this XT. And the state independent components are IID with expectation zero and has the finite alpha moment for some alpha less than or equal to 2. 2 is also fine. And this state dependent component is a martingale difference sequence. And this martingale difference sequence satisfies this inequality. So this means that the variance of the state dependent component can be large, but for a fixed X or for a given XT, it is always finite. Whereas the heavy tail part comes from this IID component. So this is the noise assumption that I make in the heavy tail case. So we have this very recent result saying that if you have a step size satisfying this decaying like this T to minus rho, and this rho is in between 0 and 1, the error of the SGD in Q norm, in 2 norm to the power Q. So here the subscript is 2, that's why we omit it. 2 norm to the power Q is given by this expression, and that is this decay rate. So this is the convergence rate that we achieve in the case of heavy-tailed noise for the last iterate of SGD to the minimizer, unique minimizer of the problem. Okay, so what is this rate about? Remember, we have a step size decaying with T to the minus rho, and we have a noise that has finite alpha moment for hopefully some alpha that is smaller than 2. And we have a Hessian that is Q positive definite. And this is a stronger assumption than the plain positive definiteness, which is equivalent to strong convexity. Right? So this rate is basically giving me when Q is going to alpha. So you see the assumption on the function and the assumption on the noise are connected. Q has to be always less than alpha, but when Q is going to alpha in this regime, you achieve this rate. Okay, and when rho is going to 1, which is the fastest decay that you can have on the step size, that gets you to the fastest convergence rate. This is the rate of Krasulina 69, but this is too fast for the weak convergence of Polyak-Ruppert averaging. So this case will not work if our objective is to show the weak convergence of Polyak-Ruppert averaging. So when alpha is going to 2, meaning that your noise is now having finite variance, then the rate that you achieve is this much. And in this case, now you can actually move Q to the, all the way to the 2. So you have the strongly convex functions. And in this case, you recover the known rate T to the minus rho over 2 for finite variance. So this is the finite variance regime, and this is the infinite variance regime. And this rate is not good for us because I want to show the wing convergence of the Polyak-Ruppert averaging. And that's too fast for that. So remember, the gradient noise was given by this, admits this decomposition. So what I will additionally assume to the previous case is that I'll assume that this average of the IID component admits an alpha stable, symmetric alpha stable limit. And so standard generalized CLT results actually has certain conditions to be satisfied. And one result is due to Kolmogorov and Gnedenko. And if the random variables with power to, low tails, and symmetric random variables with power low tails, then you have the following satisfied. So alpha stable distribution, this alpha stable limit assumption allows me to characterize the limiting behavior of the Polyak-Ruppert averaging. So I'll talk about alpha stable limits in the next slide, but the result is as follows. If the rho, q, and alpha satisfy this inequality, and this additional smoothness assumption, so you can think of this assumption as the Hessian smoothness, then for a step size sequence satisfying the standard decay, the normalized average, the Polyak-Ruppert averaging, converges weakly to an alpha stable distribution. So here, the first observation is that the step size, the index of the step size decay, rho, has to be in this regime. And in Polyak and Judiski, this was in this regime. When alpha goes to 2, when you have finite variance, these two match. But when alpha is smaller than 2, we have a smaller interval here to work with. So alpha stable distributions. So here is a figure that I took from Wikipedia, and I forgot to acknowledge in the slide. And so this is the PDF of alpha stable distribution, and this is the parameter alpha. So the variance of this limit is infinity. So there is no variance when alpha is smaller than 2. So you won't have a Gaussian CLT when alpha is smaller than 2. And when alpha is 2, this recovers the standard asymptotic CLT results of Polyak and Juditsky. It's because alpha stable when alpha equals 2 is Gaussian. And we, as with pretty much all results on Polyak-Ruppert averaging, this proof of this theorem relies on the construction first made by Polyak and Juditsky, the seminal work. And it's just that we analyze this algorithm in the heavy tail setting. That is the novelty. So one point that I would like to make is that when alpha is less than 2, there is no Gaussian CLT. So the inference methods that are constructed for SGD, the uncertainty, quantifying the uncertainty of SGD, for example, is not going to be valid because they're all based on this Gaussian CLT assumption of the Polyak-Ruppert averaging. So a lot of those methods has to be rethought in the case where you have heavy tail noise in the SGD algorithm. So before I move to non-convexity and the final result under strong convexity is a result that we obtained in 2019 as a product of the Stein's method workshop in San Jose. So here we actually characterized how fast you're converging to Gaussian in the case where you have a finite variance. Actually, if we assume that this third moment of the noise exists, then you can characterize how fast you're converging to Gaussian with this theorem. So what this theorem is saying is for any test function that is three times differentiable. You can show that this expectation, the difference between the test function evaluated at the polyacrophot averaging and a Gaussian, is upper bounded by this quantity. So the proof relies on a non-asymptotic Martingale CLT using Stein's method. But one thing that I would like to emphasize is that this rate here is not a good rate. It is because d squared divided by square root of t, number of iterations, and this is the dimension that you have. In the high dimensions, to make this number small, you need to take way too many iterations. It's not a good rate, but it is still consistent with the experiments. A lot of these methodology, like inference methodology that rely on this CLT, actually requires a small dimension plus a lot of iterations of the SGD. And so this is consistent with what we observed in practice. It's also, as a side note, burn-in helps a lot in these kind of stuff, but I don't have any theoretical quantification of that. So back to the least squares example that I started the talk with. So we considered this linear model, right? And the epsilon, the noise had infinite variance. Now, without defining the objective function, you can directly define the gradient of it. So what does this mean? This is a bit cheating, but I can actually choose a function r of x. And instead of writing this as a minimization problem, I can write this as a finding the zero of a function, right? And if I define this, the zero of the function is going to be beta zero, right? And that's basically where the minimum will be attained. So George has a question. In the rate result, was the absolute value inside the expectation or outside? Good point. That is inside the expectation. I just verified it by looking at the paper. So it should be inside the expectation, but I can double check. Okay, so in the least squares setup, the beta zero is the unique minimum of this multi-dimensional function, and x star is going to be the x star, that the zero of this function is going to be the beta naught. It's quite straightforward to see this. So the SGD updates, you can write it as a stochastic approximation algorithm, and is given by this quantity. So the noise part is going to be just as we did for the in the second slide or so. The noise, I can write it as it admits this decomposition where the IID component is given by this quantity and the state dependent component is given by this quantity. So here the state is X. Right, you see the IID component does not have the state in it. So one can verify, if you assume that the alphath moment of the noise is finite, then the alphath moment of the IID component is finite. And the state dependent component trivially satisfies this upper bound if we assume the covariates are nice, right? So this basically is telling us that the assumption two, the noise assumption, will be easily satisfied. And for the function, the Hessian of the function, we have this expected value of the ZZ transfer, covariance of the covariates, covariance of the features. So you can assume this matrix is diagonally dominant and all this assumptions are satisfied, like this Q positive definiteness is satisfied. But the Q positive definiteness is a milder assumption than diagonal dominance. So you can actually assume this on the covariance metrics, then you actually have the R convergence results can be invoked for this case. Okay, so now I will talk about non-convexity and what happens in this case. And in the case of non-convexity and non-smoothness, basically, assuming that the objective function is non-convex and non-smooth at the same time, the problem is a bit harder to handle. So we will consider in this case an SGD with a constant step size so that we can actually rely on the convergence, Markov chain convergence results. And this methodology is actually the constant analysis of constant step size, SGD, is first derived by these people in 2019, De La Voute in 2019, but the analysis was under strong convexity and smoothness. It turns out that these are not needed assumptions, and you can relax those to non-smooth and non-convex objectives. But the key point here is that I have a gamma that is step size that is constant. So this has to be gamma. It's a typo. So the assumption, the first assumption, instead of the smoothness assumption I make, is that the gradient of f, the objective function, is growing at most linearly. So this is the first assumption. The second assumption I make is that instead of strong convexity, the function satisfies a dissipativity assumption. So dissipativity is given by this inequality, and this is satisfied for all x. So what does this assumption tell me, and how does it relax strong convexity? Is here. It basically says that strong convexity is a global curvature assumption, whereas dissipativity is restricting this strong convexity to the tails. So anything above, you have the quadratic growth of f, and around the origin, you can have non-convexity. So that is that assumption. And it's quite common in non-convex optimization analysis. So in this case, the noise sequence is assumed to have finite fourth moment. And additionally, I assume that its density has full support. So so that I have a nice Markov chain defined by the SGD algorithm. And the key point is that noise is still state dependent. So I can write the standard ML SGD in this form, but it has finite variance given X, given the state. Okay, so now I used Oxford comma in the title, so you can tell me if I use it correctly or not. But yeah, so in this case, the noise is state dependent and it has finite variance, but non-convex. So given these, standard Markov chain results can tell us the ergodicity of SGD. So for a small enough step size, the SGD iterates admit a unique stationary distribution. And this distribution, although we cannot characterize it, we can show it its existence and uniqueness, and it depends on the step size. And SGD also has, for a test function, it satisfies this convergence to the stationary distribution, not to any of the minima. It's just to the stationary distribution. The convergence is geometric, but it's not directly comparable to the previous convergence results that we talked about. And so what happens to the Polyak Rupert averaging in the non-convex case? Now, heavy-tailed case, it doesn't satisfy a Gaussian CLT, but it turns out that in the non-convex case, there is a Gaussian CLT. So now I will define the average of so these iterates are evaluated at a test function phi, and I'll define the average this way, and the expectation under the invariant measure is defined this way. So this means that the Polyak-Rupert averaging, where they evaluated at a test function, is going to admit a central limit theorem given by this expression here. So this is cool. The CLT is still valid under non-convexity. But we have to talk about the bias of this algorithm in order to come up with something useful. So what do I mean by bias? So how does this compare to any of the critical points or the global minima or the minima of this non-convex function? So without making any local regularity, so if we don't assume anything further than this dissipativity assumption, this is not possible. And all we can hope for is that the SGD algorithm will satisfy this inequality. And this D is a constant that is in O1. So by letting step size small, you're not getting any improvement here. So SGD converges to a ball that contains all the critical points, and this convergence is exponentially fast, but bias is not controllable with the step size. Bias to the X star. Okay, so for that reason, I need to enforce a local regularity on top of the growth assumption that was the dissipativity. So this is the previous dissipativity. I assume this outside of a ball. And now I assume inside of a ball, there is a local regularity defined by this convex function G that is invertible, and G0 of zero is zero. Right? So this is the additional local regularity. And then under this additional localized dissipativity assumption, I can show that the SGD iterates admitted a stationary distribution, and the bias of this distribution, stationary distribution of the SGD, is now controllable by the step size. So if I let gamma to zero, the right-hand side here also converges to zero. And for a test function that is Lipschitz, you can just take this and then show that the expectation under the invariant measure minus the test function evaluated at the minimum is going to be upper bounded by this quantity, which goes to zero when gamma goes to zero. And so here is a non-convex function that is called Blake-Zisserman MLE that I found in, I think, visual reconstruction book. So this assumption, this function actually turns out satisfies the assumptions of these theorems, and you can actually verify that it has a CLT. And also this is, by experiments, it's also correct. So our results also match with the numerical studies. And in the numerical studies, we use this test function, which is the absolute value. And in the paper, we also verified like rigorously that these assumptions of our theorems are satisfied. So I'm out of time, so I'll conclude and with the summary of what I told you today. So basically, this is the convergence analysis of SGD and the Polyakov-Crawford averaging, right? So that's what we talked about. The infinite noise variance case, we show the LP convergence of SGD, and we identify the regime, the step size decay, such that you, the Polyakov-Crawford averaging admits an alpha stable limit and non-Gaussian limit. And under strong convexity, we talked about a non-asymptotic CLT rate due to via Stein's lemma. And under non-convexity, we show that Polyakov-Crawford averaging admits a CLT, and its bias can be characterized if we have additional local structure. So that's it from me today. And if you have questions, I would be happy to answer.
Okay, so thank you very much for a very nice talk. So is there any question from the audience? You can just unmute yourself and ask.
Yeah, I've got a question, Murat. I really much enjoyed your talk, and you probably guess what my question is about. So you say you cannot ever run stochastic gradient descent infinitely long.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these results with Andreas for the central limit theorem, but can you use results also for alpha stable distributions using Stein's method in order to get an explicit bound?
Yes, so that's a great question. And I think Li Hu Zhu had a recent paper on so alpha stable limits and Stein's method. So it's definitely doable. It's just that it's a matter of doing it. So yes, that's a good point.
Okay, good.
It's a very interesting direction. Like basically, how does this d squared divided by square root of t rate change when you don't have a Gaussian CLT, but you have alpha stable limit? So that's mm-hmm. a very interesting direction to explore.
Okay.
Yeah. Can I ask a question? Actually, it's a sort of a double question. So what's the motivation behind the Polyakov-Crawford averaging?
Yeah. Another great question. So the Polyakov-Crawford averaging is, so in the classical setting, it achieves the Kramer-Rao lower bound, whereas the last iterated SGD does not. So okay. Now the another interesting research direction is is the bound on lower bound on the variance, right? So what does that translate to in the heavy tail setting when there is no variance? So what kind of optimality can one prove for polyacoupled average?
Right. Okay. So is there does anyone ever consider like different types of averaging?
Yes, I think that is also common, and I don't think the analysis is very hard, given a specific weighting between the iterates. But we haven't done that in any of our results.
Okay, great, thanks. And to go back to my previous question about the absolute value, So the reason I'm asking is because. If you put the absolute value inside the expectation, then it sort of requires that you build some kind of coupling between the limiting Gaussian and your process. So it usually requires heavier machinery and potentially the rate can be worse. So if you take the absolute value outside the expectation, maybe the rate can improve.
That's an interesting point. So
usually the absolute value is outside.
I think you're right. I think the absolute value should be outside because I'm checking the Martingale CLT that we proved in the paper.
Yeah.
And it appears that it's outside of the expectation.
Okay. Because otherwise you need to do like some kind of like strong central limit theorem.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Okay. No, this is relying on basically like similar construction by Reinhardt Rillen. So it should be outside, I guess.
Yeah. We always have it outside.
Yeah.
Hi, I had a quick question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So the assumption on the covariances of the cones. So you said that in the case of P equals one, it's aligned to the diagonal dominant. So is there like an intuition on what kind of how that changes the covariance structure in the case of linear regression? So do the coordinates have to be more aligned with like an identity, or does the coordinates have to be more independent or something like this?
So you have the covariance expected value of ZZ transpose, right? So these are your covariates. And this is a kind of a sigma. And that is like, if this sigma satisfies diagonal dominance, then this assumption is satisfied because then you are in this red regime and that is going to satisfy any PSD assumption. So this only means that like this covariance, I mean, for example, if you have Whitehead covariance, then this is identity, right? So it's going to be satisfied, for example. Does that answer your question or did I miss a part of your question?
So in some sense, is the assumption saying that the coordinates have to be more independent as P increases? So P equals two, it will always be satisfied. But then
I think
it moves towards diagonal dominance, you're saying, you know, that the variance has to be closer to an identity in some sense.
Yeah. So I think, so this is what I want, right? So Zij where J is not I. So I think that can be interpreted this way.
I just wondered whether that would sort of in between in the case of P equals, you know, one and two. That was also
So P equals to two will certainly like it's a weaker assumption than the diagonal dominance. And this is also just to clarify, this is not really diagonal dominance. This is diagonal dominance with non-negative diagonal entries. And in this case, so this is the assumption that you have. And I think you can interpret this as like the correlation between the features are weaker compared to the strong convex case.
Cool, thank you.
Any other question from the audience? Yeah, I have a silly question, I guess. For the last part of the talk, the constant step size non-convexity. So if it's a mini batch SGD instead of online SGD, can we still prove like with some stronger assumption to prove the central limit theorem?
You can use mini batch SGD, so let me go back to this slide. So this is still valid. Like you can have gamma t plus one equals gamma constant step size, but you can have mini batch SGD, but this is stream of data. So it's not like you have a batch of data that you resample and do SGD. Okay. So you should be doing these mini batches should be coming in as like new data points. That's what I meant. So if okay. that is the case, you can do it. But everything here in this talk is online SGD.
Okay.
You said there's a stationary distribution for the SGD. Do you have any like type of convergence results? Sorry if you mentioned it.
So convergence to the invariant measure?
Yeah.
So convergence to, so the standard ergodicity type of stuff is like easy to prove using Markov chain machinery, like this one, right? So this is the convergence that I briefly talked about.
Okay.
So this is quite standard, but the important point is like, this is easy, but what is hard is this guy. Like, how do you actually characterize anything about this invariant measure is the biggest challenge. That's not what we're doing.
Yeah, I see what you mean. So, but I guess my question is, so in practice, when you run algorithms like this, do you ever have convergence to the invariant distribution, or do people just run it for much shorter time scale so that you may only ever see you're still close to initialization, or the part of the invariant measure you explore is heavily influenced by your initialization.
So that's a good point. And so what you're saying is, okay, this is not answering your question, because this is true for any initialization. You're getting the same ergodicity result. So what you're saying is if the stationary distribution depends on the, or like, it could depend on the initialization as well.
Well, not quite. What I'm saying is, so obviously this R there, the rate is sort of, I'm not sure if you've quantified it.
You could, you can verify this R.
Okay.
I mean, I think we stopped at saying R is less than one and greater than zero, but this is kind of like, I think you can compute it.
But yeah, but what I'm saying, okay, so let me rephrase. So I'm not sure how you're proving this, but if you're doing it using drift and Lyapunov functions and things like that, it's very likely that this R will be very, very bad in terms of the dimension dependence.
Yes. Exactly.
So if you do that in practice, if you plug that in and you say, okay, so I've run my algorithm for, let's say, capital K steps, how close am I to the invariant distribution? What I'm saying is, so obviously this gives you a mixing time. So does the mixing time compare to practical runtimes for these algorithms? Or is it at a completely different time scale so that you'll never ever see the invariant distribution?
So that's a good point. So this proposition is used in this theorem, which is asymptotic. So okay. We actually never required R to be something nice. As long as it's less than one, we were good. So we didn't explore anything that like what happens in the finite sample regime, because our objective was this CLT.
Okay.
And which is asymptotic, but that's a interesting thing to think about, actually.
In your experience, what do you think?
So I can show you. I mean, I knew I wasn't going to have time, so that's why I. Oh wait, I moved. Yeah. Okay. So it's I actually had experiments that I took it out of the talk, but it's. So what people observe is like when D is larger than 20, you have to run SGD for a very long time to see any of these results, actually, these asymptotic CLT results. That is in line with this non-asymptotic version of the CLT. So it's like if the rate is d squared over square root of t, then you expect to run your SGD forever if d is like large, right? So and what we observe is similar. The experiments, you can verify stuff when d is like 20, 50, but anything beyond that is hard.
Right, okay, thanks.
Yeah. Okay, I guess we have a run out of time, so let's end the seminar for today. So thank you everyone for coming, and let's thank the speaker again and have a nice weekend.
Thank you for coming.